You know, as I read the New Testament, the Gospels in particular, there are certain scenes, certain happenings reported that I find myself thinking, I wish I'd been there. I wish I'd been one of the people in that story. For example, maybe my favourite story in the whole of the Gospel, just about. It's a story that takes place in a little village near Jerusalem called Emmaus. And two followers of Jesus have been going there to Emmaus. And a stranger joins them on the road, walks with them. And then when they get to where they were going, they eat together. And as the stranger breaks bread, suddenly the eyes are opened. The disciples, those followers of Jesus, their eyes are opened. Suddenly they realize that it's Jesus who is with them. It's Jesus who has broken the bread for them. And it says this, a fire burns within them. I read that story and I think, I wish it had been me. I wish I had been there to sense that moment, that fire burning, to realize that it was Jesus alive. And then there are stories I read and find myself thinking, oh boy, I'm glad that wasn't me. And here is one of them, this story of Peter. And all the Gospels carry it in one way or another, but each brings a slightly different detail. Here we have in Luke's Gospel that immediately after Peter's third denial, Jesus, who was there in the courtyard, caught Peter's eye. And for a moment, there was a gaze, a look between the two men. It sends a shiver down me even now thinking about that. What must that have been like for Peter? He has just denied ever having known Jesus. And right then, he sees Jesus. Jesus sees him, and the two meet each other, eye to eye. Oh, what must that have been like for Peter? That moment of realization of what he had just done in denying Jesus. And I go on to think to myself further, what must the look in Jesus' eye have been? I'm going to pause and ask you to reflect on that for a moment with people around about you. Now, you know what I mean. It's possible to do quite different things as you look at someone. You can look at someone sharply. You can convey something in your eyes that is censorious. Or you can look at someone softly. You can say it all with the look that you give. What do you think was the look in Jesus' eye at that moment when he and Peter were caught in that gaze? Turn to your neighbor. Have a moment speculating about that question. Well, I wonder, those of you who are watching online this morning, I wonder what you have reflected upon as the congregation here has shared that question. There may be many different answers to it. But let's do a very quick straw poll. Do you think essentially Jesus looked with a sort of angry look in his face, a disapproving and censorious, or do you think it was something different? Do you think there was sadness in his eyes? So if you think it was the first one, that he was angry with Peter and looked at him harshly, is that you? Do you think that was the look? Do you think it was the other? Do you think there was sadness and pity and all of those things? Is that you? Either way, Peter was shamed. He was full of shame for what he had done. And we read that he went out and wept bitterly. That he went out and wept bitterly. Let's just pick our way through some of what goes on. We back up to the scene in the upper room. Jesus has prophesied that Judas will betray him. And Peter, as was always Peter's way, he jumps in with both feet and says, well, no matter what else happens, no matter what anyone else does, Lord, I'll never give up on you. I'll follow you faithfully all the way. And then he says this to Jesus, to his master, I will lay down my life for you. Do you see the great irony in that? Here was Peter saying to Jesus, I will lay down my life for you. Because all that's required of you is that you just think ahead a little. And what happens? It's the exact opposite. Within hours of this moment, it's Jesus who lays down his life for Peter. But always with bravado, Peter is to the fore. And we have to admire him, his great courage and his heart, which he wore on his sleeve. He was always there, wanting to assure Jesus, but knowing that it's going to be somewhat different. Jesus responds to him, Peter, will you really lay down your life for me? I think Jesus is saying, Peter, you don't know what you're saying. He understood his passion, but you don't understand, Peter, what you're saying. And then this, I tell you the truth. Before the cock crows, you will disown me three times. You know, I think Peter was the kind of guy who would have seen that as something of a challenge. Oh no, I won't. I'm sure it was far too important a moment for it to become something of a pantomime sketch. But Jesus knew he would, despite Peter's protestations to the contrary. Let me break in for a moment in the story with a little point of interest. We know from rabbinical law that it was against the law to have a cockerel within the perimeters of the city. So some Bible scholars find themselves questioning this part of the story. Doesn't ring true. You couldn't own cockerels in the city. So how can we have a cock crowing three times? Some people respond this way. Hey, there's laws, but all laws are not kept. So maybe here was a situation where, well, this was a law, but people had them anyway. But there's another very interesting possibility, and it's this. The word for the cock crow is exactly the same word for the final watch of the night into which the Roman guards divided the nighttime hours. They divided the night into quarters, and certain guards would be on for the first quarter, and then they would be replaced and so on, changing of the guard through the night. The final quarter, the final watch, was known by the very same word that is used for the cock crowing. So some Bible scholars speculate that perhaps we should read it this way, that Peter denied Jesus, and then the trumpet blast was heard, the trumpet for the changing of the guard. Who knows? But it's just a little point of interest about what exactly might have happened at that time. And then, of course, Jesus is arrested in Gethsemane by the betrayal of Judas, and he is taken to the high priest's house. John gives us a detail in that story that none of the other gospel writers do, that there was another disciple also who went with Peter. And there they are. There's a servant girl at the door whose job it is to admit people or otherwise into the courtyard of the high priest. And as Peter is going in, this servant girl, perhaps recognizing him or hearing his accent to be that of the Galileans, she challenges Peter. Hold on a minute. Are you not one of his followers? Now here's the man, Peter, who said that he would follow Jesus to the end. Here's the man, Peter, who said he would lay down his life for Jesus. Here's the man, Peter, who said, I'll never deny you, Lord. But in that moment, what comes out of his mouth but the very opposite of what he said? Very opposite of what he promised he would say. I don't know him. Denial, number one. And the same thing happens again. Denial, number two. And then for the third time, someone says to him, didn't I see you with him in the olive grove? In other words, in the garden of Gethsemane, where the arrest took place. Didn't I see you there? And again, in that moment of weakness, Peter denies ever having known him. And then, the cock crow. We come back to it as we started with this scene of Peter going out and weeping bitterly. You know, I was saying that would be a story that I would want no part of. But what I want us to reflect on today, and as we journey through Lent together, is this. You might not have had a moment when, in exactly the same circumstances, you have out and out denied knowing Jesus. But have there been times in your life when you have let him down? Hands up to that. Have there been times when you have let him down? This week, these days just passed, have there been times when you have let him down? When perhaps you have spoken harshly, when your response to a situation has not been one of love, as we are all called to. Have there been times, even in these last few days, when you have veered from the path of following Jesus in one way or another? What I'm saying to you, friends, is this. We mustn't read the story of Peter or any other of these stories and sort of think of it as being distant from us and not relating to us in any way. You can't say to yourself, well, I've never been stood there at a fire. I've never had people come up to me and say, do you know Jesus? I've never had the cock crow. It's not about that. What Peter did in that moment was to let his Lord down, to let himself down. And in as much as we fall short in our discipleship, that's what we do. We let him down. So I can't remove myself from this story. And as I consider, as we all must do from time to time, the ways in which we have let our Lord down, then this experience of Peter must in some way be ours too. And if you go through all of life, and if you never find yourself weeping bitterly out of a sense of having let him down, then I put it to you that your self-examination has not gone deep enough. I'm saying to you that in this sense, we're all Peters. We just back up for a moment, back to the garden and the moment of the arrest. You've got Jesus' followers there, his closest friends. And when Jesus is arrested, look what happens. All the disciples deserted him and fled, out of fear, of course. So, what I want to do at this point is balance out any conclusions we may draw about Peter. Sure, he let Jesus down in that moment. But there could never have been that moment if, first of all, there wasn't the supreme courage of Peter. Because while all the others fled for their lives, Peter went after Jesus. Having been to those very places, I can tell you, it is very, very real. This photograph is taken in the Garden of Gethsemane. These trees are as old as these stories are. I do picture that tree and I wonder, is that where Jesus wept bitterly? Is that where he said to his Father, if you can take this cup of suffering from me? Is it here, just beyond or in front of, that the soldiers came with the officers of the temple to arrest Jesus? But while all the other disciples who were there in the garden fled, Peter alone followed. And while they dragged off his Lord, his Master, to do with him as they would, Peter was there following. And these are the steps that lead to the house of the high priest. And as Jesus was taken up these stairs, Peter followed. And I wonder if you are able to look deep within yourself this morning and consider, would you have got this far? Would you have been one of the other ones who fled from the garden? Would your strength, would your following have deserted you right there in the garden? Or would you have been like Peter? Would you have ascended the steps following your master to his trial? Three times I've been to Jerusalem, three times I've climbed these steps, and on each occasion, deep within myself, I've asked that question. Would I have done as Peter had done and followed Jesus? So whatever else we say about him, this we affirm. He was brave. He was loyal where the others were not. Last week I was finding myself thinking this. Actually, Peter is not very different from Judas at all. One betrayed him, one denied him. But as I've thought about this all the more through the week, I think, in fact, they are quite different. It's clear to us from these Gospels that the betrayal of Jesus by Judas was premeditated. He calculated what he was going to do. He planned it out. And then he watched for the moment of opportunity to betray his Lord. So that is one set of circumstances. Peter was entirely different. Peter's intention was to follow his Lord, even if it meant to laying down his life. Peter's heart was absolutely 100% in the right way. But in a moment of weakness, and that's all, in a moment of weakness, he let his Lord down. That is a very different thing to what Judas did. And that's why when I go back to this idea of Jesus and Peter catching one another's look, the gaze, that I think Jesus would have looked over at Peter, his eyes full of pity and love. Because Jesus knew that Peter's heart was right. And therefore, did not judge him on his moment of weakness, but on his whole story. Do you know, folks, there is a great lesson for all of us in that. In how we relate to one another, on how we look upon one another. If you know someone whose character you have worked out well through the years, someone who has been reliable as a friend to you through many twists and turns of life. And then, in a moment, for one reason or another, that person lets you down. Don't judge them on that moment of weakness. Judge them on what you know of their whole person and of their whole story. We should be, in that way, much more understanding, much more forgiving of one another, as Jesus certainly was to Peter. I finish up with this. Do you remember when John the moderator was here just a couple of weeks ago? He gave us this wonderful picture of two basins of water. Do you remember? One basin that Jesus used to wash the feet of his disciples. The other basin that Pilate used to wash his hands, abdicating responsibility for anything that was now going to happen to Jesus. Two basins. Today I finish up with this. Two fires. And the text denotes that these were charcoal fires. The first one, outside the high priest's house, in the courtyard, we're told it was cold. The servant folks and others have lit a charcoal fire to warm themselves, and there was Peter, also warming himself. And in those moments came his denials. But let's go to the end of the Gospel of John. With another charcoal fire. This time, on the shore of Lake Galilee, sometime afterwards, Peter and all the others have gone back to Galilee, have gone back to the fishing. And there they are on the water after a night of fishing, coming towards the shore. And as they draw nearer, they're aware of a man on the beach, the stony beach of the Sea of Galilee. And there he has lit a fire, a charcoal fire. And there he is preparing breakfast. The man is Jesus. I think that would not have been lost to Peter. Jesus, the charcoal fire. I'm certain that as Peter came to Jesus at the fire, his mind must have gone back to the scene outside the high priest's house. He must have been thinking to himself, last time I stood around the fire like this, I denied knowing my Lord. And here he is once more at the fire. But in what follows, we see absolutely that Jesus forgives him. That Jesus loves him nonetheless. And that Jesus has plan and purpose for his life. You see, this is the gift that Jesus has to see who we might be. And not to judge us on what we did in the moment. And so at this charcoal fire, we have the beginning for Peter. Remember that song we sang before the children went out this morning? Nothing good I do, nothing bad I do can ever make you love me less than you do today. Peter denied ever having known him. And yet Jesus' love for him was nonetheless. Whoever you are, whatever you've done in life, whatever the ways in which you've let him down might have been, know in your heart this morning that he's there by the fire. And his love for you is forever. Let's pray.